corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. That special music means that today is Tuesday. It's Election Tuesday. Longtime listeners know that every Tuesday, from now until that most important Tuesday, November 2nd, we talk about election news, what's going on in the race between John Kerry and George Bush. And whatever you want to talk about is fair game. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can always send an email or to comment at radioinsidescoop.com, or like many of you do, just contribute to the blog. Go to the website, radioinsidescoop.com, and add whatever comments you want to add. Today I want to talk about lots of things. I want to talk about why it is that George Bush fears dissent, why it is that he won't allow Kerry supporters at his rallies. Now, Kerry doesn't mind having Bush supporters at his rallies, but Bush doesn't even want undecided voters at his rallies. He just wants the photo ops, just wants people who are committed to supporting him, people who don't ask tough questions. What is it about the president that means that he can't handle opposition? Why is he so afraid of it? And, you know, I know we've been talking about it a lot, but the whole media storm over the Swift Boat veterans has got to be discussed. You know, we brought this issue up really quite early in the process, a couple weeks ago. Now it is a huge storm. Many of you ask when I take a day off, like I did yesterday, Mark, what are you doing? We miss you. You use all manner of liberal guilt. And you know what? That works on me. It works pretty well on me, so it's kind of dangerous. But I'll tell you what I've been doing. I've been busy writing a piece that I hope to get published on the Swift Boat controversy, an idea, by the way, that came originally from a listener, Skip. Thank you very much. I've been working on it and working on it and working on it all day until, boom, suddenly it's time to go on air and I have to rush in and do this. So pardon me if I'm a little unorganized today, but I do have a lot to talk about. I'm hoping to get Tom Robbins on the line. Let me see if that's him that called in. Tom, is that you or is that a listener?
That's me, Mark.
Okay, good. All right. I wasn't sure because we didn't talk beforehand like we normally do. My guest is the perennial Tom Robbins. He's been here a number of times. And he's my token Republican guest for the course, the state chair of the Utah College Republicans. And, you know, I believe in providing balance. I believe in freedom of speech and other points of view. I wish our president did. And so that's why I'm always glad to have Tom on the air with me. Hey, Tom, let me start with the question that I posed at the beginning of the broadcast. And that is, what is it about George Bush that he fears dissent? Let me just give you a few examples, and maybe you can explain these to me. One is that in New Mexico, they asked anyone who wanted to go to a rally in Albuquerque for the president, they had to sign, in effect, a loyalty oath, a promise that they would vote for the president in the fall. Number two, we have a guy that made a practice of going to Bush rallies with Kerry T-shirts and Kerry rallies with Bush T-shirts. Every Bush rally he went to with a Kerry T-shirt, he was asked to leave, asked to remove his T-shirt and go. But when he went to Kerry rallies with Bush T-shirts, the Kerry people didn't seem to mind, didn't seem to even really notice, and he could keep it on for much of the rally. That's number two. Number three, there's the case of Brett Bercy. Brett Bercy was on my show a few months ago, and he's a guy way before the election even began who, about a year ago, wanted to go to the president's to an airport in Columbia, South Carolina, where President Bush was arriving. And anyone could go. It was open to the public. It was a public airport. But he carried a sign that said, no blood for oil, and he was not allowed in. In fact, not only was he not allowed in, but he was arrested, put in jail overnight, and charged with violating the president's security. The security obligations of the Secret Service. Brett Bercy is on no list, watch list that any of us are aware of, but and he certainly wasn't armed with any weapons. His only weapon was this cardboard sign, no blood for oil. And then recently here in Maryland, just around the corner, there is a guy that had the audacity to shout out a Kerry slogan at a Bush event, and he actually was fired. he lost his job. Now, why is Bush rally, and the news source refused to give it to him, why is it that Bush doesn't want Kerry supporters at his rally, or even undecided supporters? Why do you think that Kerry doesn't fear dissent in the way that Bush does?
Well, I don't know the specific examples, obviously, which you brought up, very specific as far as what's happened to certain people. I do know, however, that college Republicans, as far as the Iowa caucuses that were trying to voice dissent against Kerry and Dean and a host of others from the left who were trying to be the Democratic nominee, I've talked to them while they were there during the caucus and during the get-out-the-vote process there, and they have funny stories of basically being harassed or inciting some other things which would be a potential threat. But, you know, we've seen that John Kerry, when he needed to raise money, he took a swipe at the college Republicans. He goes as low as he needs to be able to raise
you can charge John Kerry with whatever you want, and we can get to whatever you want to talk about. But my specific question is on this very clear policy. And again, you've had neutral sources. They go in. I mean, they run the test. They wear a Kerry T-shirt at a Bush rally. They're harassed. They're kicked out. They're forced to remove the shirt. Whereas Bush people, including our mutual friend Allison, who you work with all the time, Allison Eichley, she can go to a Kerry event dressed as a flip flopper and try to get on camera, and she continues to do that, right, Tom?
Well, it's definitely something that's very popular with college students to be able to show Kerry's flip flopping.
Fine, but my question is this: why is it that Kerry tolerates dissent and Bush doesn't? Let me just get a few things straight. Obviously, no one should be disrupting a speech or you know, drowning someone out so that they can't speak. Neither of us support that. But can you agree with me that it's really ridiculous of the New Mexico Bush officials to insist that you sign a loyalty oath before you can see the president?
Specifically, I don't know exactly what that's talking about. I know with campaign events that I've been involved with for the many years that I've been involved with college campus rallies, a lot of times certain events are only open to supporters, and other ones are open to the media, and other ones are open up to everyone. I remember in Iowa, when both the campaigns were in Iowa, George W. Bush decided to have an open rally for all the citizens to come and enjoy, and at that point, John Kerry decided to have a much smaller event, more private affair, where he was just talking specifically to business leaders in the area. So different campaigns use different strategies at different times to excite their base or to be able to get broad media bits out.
Well, what's interesting is that when we have public rallies, or rallies are supposed to be open to the public, they don't seem to tolerate. I mean, even just wearing a Kerry T-shirt. Should someone be able to wear a Kerry T-shirt and go to a Bush rally, or should that not be allowed?
Yeah, if it's open to the public, absolutely they should be able to wear a Kerry T-shirt.
Okay, all right. We can agree on that.
Fair enough.
I've
probably been involved, you know, with one or two tactics myself as far as, you know, different rallies and stuff. So you get it on both sides.
Well, I'm afraid I don't see it on both sides, and the press isn't seeing that way either. But the most egregious example, of course, was the arrest of Brett Bercy, who had the audacity to bring a sign, No Blood for Oil, to the airport in Columbia, South Carolina. And by the way, folks, if you want to hear that show or any other shows passed on the Inside Scoop, it's very easy to do. Just go to the website, www.radioinsidescoop.com. Click on the broadcast archive. You can comment on the blog at that point, or you can just listen to old shows. I had a number of people actually, and I appreciate this, folks. I do. They were very disappointed we didn't have a show yesterday. You know, it is my summer, and I'm trying to get stuff done here. But if you want to hear an old, more than 100 we have on the archive. Some of the older ones aren't archived. But pick a topic. You can't have heard every one of my shows. Click on it, listen in, and hopefully you'll be ready again when we do the live shows again. As I said, one of the things I've been working on, and I hope to publish it on my website and later on several other places. Well, I hope to publish on my website today, and maybe even see if I can get an op-ed in some newspaper later on. But I've been writing about the motivations of the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth group. And it's really quite interesting to me. And again, I guess my thanks to listener Skip, who suggested I write some of my comments down. I've really been, mulling over the 1971 debate between John Kerry and John O'Neill, which I think is fascinating, just as a part of United States history, as well as some insight into both John Kerry and John O'Neill. I don't know, Tom, have you had a chance to see that old Dick Cavett debate?
I haven't. I'll have to pull that up and take a look at it.
Yeah, you really should.
We talked about it first on the Inside Scoop, but it's getting a little bit more
You're absolutely right, Tom. We talked about comments from me, admittedly, but none of that is taken out. The full hour is there. In fact, we went on to about an hour and 45 minutes. And if you want to hear that, just click on Friday's show. But what really struck me about it was that I think you can divide the motivations of the Swift Boat Group into two. There are the actual vets behind the ads, and they're the money men. Now, the money men, it's very easy to understand. They want Bush to win. These are close associates of Karl Rove and George Bush. They're the kind of people that always helped George Bush. They ran the smear campaign against John McCain. Bob Perry is the leading Republican donator in all of Texas. He gives millions of dollars to Republican candidates. And he was approached. Of course he gave more. And the same woman who drafted the McCain smear, of course, did more. And so clearly we understand why people who want to support Bush are aiding these people with lots and lots of money. That's easy to understand. What's, I think, more difficult to understand is the motivations of the vets themselves. And I really had a hard time understanding it until I saw the Dick Cavett show. And that to me, and we've been talking about it on the blog somewhat, that to me made me pretty clear what the motivations are. These guys are, well, I'll try to put it gently, but they broke the conventions of war. Let's put it that way. These are people who participated in acts in Vietnam that violated Geneva Conventions. Now, John Kerry will say that he did so as well. Specifically, they did something called a free fire zone. And a free fire zone is where you shoot at anyone that moves, combatant, non-combatant alike. And soldiers in Vietnam were ordered by the superiors again and again and again to participate in these free fire zones. And it was interesting that on the Dick Cavett show, John Kerry said he was in one, and in fact he asked John O'Neill, and John O'Neill said he was. John Kerry was trying to fight these free fire zones. In fact, he actually went to his superiors, asked them, you know, said the men were practically on the verge of mutiny and that they really didn't want to do this, and his superiors actually agreed until his commanding officer was removed by Richard Nixon. That's all in the tape, which I really advocate you seeing. But it seems to me that while John Kerry was focusing on the policymakers, he was focusing on the orders, focusing on these policies that were against international law, John O'Neill took it personally. And a lot of these vets have taken it personally. And I want to read to you a number of examples of that as we go on in the program. But first, I want to get another listener on the air. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Oh, yeah, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon, I know that you're a Vietnam vet yourself.
I certainly am.
Well, what's your question or comment?
Well, I just wanted to comment that I'm not getting a connection to the Listen Live button, but...
Wow. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. We'll make sure
You know, whatever you were talking about, I wouldn't mind making a comment about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you stay on, Gordon? I'm going to go to commercial break, make sure we fix the Listen Live button so that everyone can listen in. And when we come back from commercial break, Gordon, stay on the line, and we'll talk about it, all right?
Okay, okay.
Hang on.
But the giant corporations get all the cash. We gotta make the Republicans quit.
I'll tell you about him today on Hightower Radio. It's time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to those in the news who had their tongues going 100 miles per hour, but who forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober goes to Washington lobbyist Frank Keating. He's the former right-wing governor of Oklahoma who tried to get a top political job in the Bush regime, but ethical problems disqualified him. So Frank sank to a lower ethical strata, hiring on to hustle legislative favors for life insurance corporations. Appallingly, Frank recently stood up for several insurance firms that are engaged in a shabby insider deal to fleece young American soldiers who are on their way to war in Iraq. Often posing as military instructors in personal finance, insurance agents from these corporations have duped unwitting young troops into buying an ethical act of war profiteering. But heeding the industry mouthpiece to blame the victims, someone who is mature enough to fight and quite possibly die for their country should be freely able to... They should have, he said. What a goober. He knows that this is not about free markets or free will. These low-ranking soldiers are set up for the insurance predators. The sales pitch often comes as part of compulsory military classes. The soldiers are not even told they're buying insurance, and many of the insurance agents are retired military officers. These 18, 19, 20-year-old soldiers, conditioned to obeying the commands, believe that retired Colonel so-and-so is telling them something they must do, so they sign without questioning. This is Jim Hightower saying, yet Keating is still lobbying Congress to let his corporate clients continue picking the pockets of the underpaid grunts heading to Iraq. Is this the freedom they're being asked to die for? I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V. Let's stop beating around the bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. The Listen Live link was down, but it is now fixed. I have fixed it. Thank you very much, Gordon, for bringing it to my attention. That's the problem when I spend all day drafting an article and don't pay attention to the basic technical things it takes to put this show on the road. It's entirely my fault. I will admit when I make a mistake, and I did, and I apologize to all of you who can now hear the sound of my voice. Hey, Gordon, maybe you can address this question with Tom and see what you think. We were talking about two things. They're kind of different things. One is, the first thing we talked about is George Bush, and I gave a number of examples that those of you on the web probably didn't hear, but basically a Bush refusing to allow Kerry supporters or even undecided supporters into his campaign events. In New Mexico, they basically signed a loyalty oath or had to get in. We had a guy, a reporter, that had the interesting job of wearing Kerry T-shirts to Bush campaigns and Bush T-shirts to Kerry campaigns, and he found that the Bush supporters and actually harassed him, made him take off the T-shirt or made him leave the event, whereas he could go to Kerry's campaign with a Bush T-shirt and it didn't bother anyone. We gave the example of Brett Bercy, who was here several months ago, who tried to appear at a public event for Bush at the South Carolina Columbia Airport and with a sign saying no blood for oil and was arrested. We had a person here in Frederick, Maryland, just around the corner from Washington, D.C., who lost their job because they supported Kerry and spoke out at a Bush event. And we even have, and this was shown on Jon Stewart, one of my favorites, he showed going into a Bush event, and not only do you have to be a Bush supporter and sign in, but you have the people that are pushing people into the rally saying, you know, cheer the president, make sure you cheer loud, we want to hear you cheer loud. And I guess the last thing and again, I'm thankful to Jon Stewart for showing, were some of the very important questions asked at President Bush's events. He would, of course, insist that only his supporters attend the events and then have an Ask the President town meeting. What would these questions be? Well, one of them was, Mr. President, we really want to pray for you and your troops. Another one was, I want to second what the first person just said. And a third one asked for an autograph. So my question to Tom, and then Gordon, I want to hear your thoughts on this, is, you know, Tom, can we agree that it doesn't really serve anyone good to just preach to your supporters that really would be nice if both these candidates got out and spoke to people who are undecided?
We're going to see both of the candidates go out and speak. I think something that we're all working towards and basically are looking forward to in the campaign are the debates. I think they're going to be very exciting, and Edwards and Kerry and Bush. But there's a part of campaigning which is exciting and energizing your base, which is when you talk to your supporters and you rally your supporters. Clinton was great at it in 92, and that's why he got reelected soundly in 96. He's able to rally his base, and that's what Bush is doing with some of these rallies.
But I'll tell you something. I went to Clinton events in 96 at least, and I actually went to Al Gore events in 2000, and there was no chairs. But I remember one event where I actually did see somebody with a Bush sticker, and we joked with him. We harassed him, but you know, in a nice way, with jokes, not with we didn't force him out or tell him to leave or anything like that. You know, this kind of stuff does happen, and it strikes me that this is a president who really just doesn't want to be asked tough questions. He, you know, he hides from press conferences. He's had the fewest of any modern president, and he doesn't really like to face people who could ask him tough questions. Well, let me ask you this on the debates. John Kerry called for debates way back in March. I know there's going to be the debates in October. John Kerry thinks there should be more debates than just the three right before the election. But Bush has said no. Who do you think's right, Tom? Tom, you first.
They have a format set up as far as getting the most viewership and as far as the American people and what they focus in on and their attention to political things is that they focus on the three major political debates, and that's going to get the biggest bang for as far as the viewer audience and getting it out.
Too many debates, too much information bores the American viewer. Is that your point, Tom?
Well, basically they're using the strategy which Clinton did in 96, and that is don't debate dull until you have to, up until the debates. It's whoever the incumbent is basically tries, you know, to do the network debates. And as challenger, historically, just from a political science standpoint, always wants to have more debates.
Yeah, but
no matter what party you're
in. The difference is Bush was ahead of Dole and in 96, and excuse me, Clinton was ahead of Dole in 96, and Bush is behind Kerry now. Gordon, what do you want to comment on?
Well, if you want to talk about the campaign events of the Republican Party, I mean, it behooves them not to even deal in the democratic process. I mean, their whole scope is about lies and secrecy, and if anybody wants to talk about fair discourse, only a can of worms can be opened. It can't help them at all.
I think it's mostly because campaign events today really are... They're not for the people that are there. They're not. They're not for the 1,000, 2,000, even 30,000 people that show up at some of these rallies. They're not the ones that are there. They're done for the TV cameras. That's why the backdrop is so important for both candidates. And that's why Bush is preventing the Kerry supporters from coming in, because they're concerned about how it looks on TV. And that's more important to them than things like public access or allowing the public to ask tough questions of the president. It's all about image.
We saw evidence of this basically in the Democratic National Convention, which took to the extreme as far as scripting. They said they didn't censure, but that they were sculpting speeches, basically checking every single word. And that's just the political world, which went from A to Z, and they're going to draw the line on how to get there. And if you step out of line, they're going to put you back in
place.
Well,
actually, let's talk about where I think you're right and where I think you're wrong, Tom. It is true that both parties, candidates for several elections now, they do look at the speeches of the people that submit them, and they do make editing suggestions. And it is true in the Democratic National Convention's case that most of the speakers accepted the Kerry people's suggestions. Most of them were taking out the negative attacks against George Bush, calming things down, and making it a more positive convention, because that's what Kerry and that's what Edwards wanted. Interestingly, there were only really three people who did not accept Kerry's suggestions, and they were the toughest speeches of them all. They were Ted Kennedy, Jimmy Carter, and Al Sharpton.
You're trying to tell me that Ted Kennedy didn't toe the party line at the convention, that he somehow just went off the cuff and said whatever you went?
Well, Kennedy, they all submitted their speeches in advance, but actually, and I reported this back during the Democratic National Convention, the person who most refused Kerry's suggestions was actually Jimmy Carter. He, of every speaker out there, was the least willing to take Kerry's suggestions. And although they were suggestions that Kerry made, Kerry recognized that at the end of the day it was Carter's speech, and he couldn't force Carter to say something, and Carter refused Kerry's suggestions, and therefore he gave a very strong speech about a president has to lead, not to mislead. Kennedy accepted some suggestions, but not all. Virtually everyone else accepted all the suggestions. And then, of course, he didn't give the speech he submitted to John Kerry in advance. Which was about a 5-minute speech. He went on for about 20 minutes to answer Bush's claim that the Democrats take blacks for granted, where he gave his stunning metaphor where he talked about the fact that blacks, after they were freed as slaves in the United States, they were promised 40 acres and a mule. Well, they didn't get the 40 acres. They didn't get the mule. So they're riding this donkey as far as it goes. That was pure Al Sharpton, and
yeah,
I guarantee you.
Sharpton loves the spotlight, and, you know, he would have talked for 45 minutes.
Well, no, but the point is that Kerry didn't, you know, play the music. They didn't grab a hook. They didn't knock him off the air. Sure, they did not. Certainly did not. I mean, he went off the cuff. They did not look at his speech. They said that people doing the teleprompters, like, didn't know where to go because Al Sharpton went away from his speech. The point is this. Yes, in every modern convention, a candidate does try to get the people that speak to hew to the message. And this was a message of positivity, of positive portrayals, to distinguish them really from the Republicans that have run such completely negative campaign. Virtually everything they do has been anti-Kerry, while everything Kerry does, virtually everything is positive or defending himself from attack.
False, Mark. If you look at all the different groups that are working to defeat George W. Bush, whether that's billionaire George Sorensen or if that's MoveOn.org, they've taken an extremely negative tone. John Kerry himself called for a regime change when we had troops just outside of Baghdad trying to follow their commander-in-chief.
Well, I support a regime change. I mean, if you don't support President Bush, you support a regime change.
Well, that is absolutely disgusting to think that John Kerry, while troops were just right outside of Baghdad, putting their life on the line, would basically call for the commander-in-chief to be kicked out, undermining the support that he was going into war.
Kicked out in a constitutional election? I don't think John Kerry, and I don't think you have any evidence John Kerry was calling for anyone to kill the president or have a coup d'etat. He wanted to, in a regime change, he wanted the Democrats to win the election. I think that's practically unworthy of mentioning. It's just, yes, of course he wants a regime that has ruled over us, has not been good, and he thinks it should be changed. I don't see that as
Well, 2 weeks before we're going to go into Baghdad with our troops putting their lives on the line, there can be a civil discussion, but that's when we need to come together and support the commander-in-chief. It's not the time for someone to be so trigger-happy for them to be president of the United States that they need to be calling for an outright regime change and laughing and joking about it. Should have a little bit more respect for people in uniform.
Well, you know, part of my problem is, and this goes back with the other thing that I was talking about with the Swift Boat veterans, is this idea of you shouldn't challenge the president during wartime. I've got a real problem with that in a democracy, because sometimes it seems like in the run-up to war, well, you can't challenge the president because that will encourage Saddam Hussein not to comply with the inspectors. If you challenge what the president's doing, then that helps the enemy, and so you can't do that. And then we're fighting the war, and oh, you can't challenge the president. We're in the middle of a war. And then, as we learned in Vietnam, the war can last for years and years and years. Tens of thousands of Americans can die, and still, in 1971, years after the war began, when John Kerry challenges what then-President Richard Nixon was doing, oh no, he was called unpatriotic, basically, by John O'Neill. I mean, they were saying that he was helping the enemy, helping the Viet Cong by criticizing the president. If you can't criticize a war before it happens, during
what John Kerry said, in March of 2003, he promised not to attack the president when war began. He said, quote, "We will cease his complaints once the shooting starts. It's what you owe the troops," was a statement from Kerry, because he said he was a Navy veteran of the Vietnam War, and he says, "I remember being one of those guys and reading news reports from home. If America is at war, I won't speak a word without measuring how it'll sound to the guys doing the fighting when they're listening to their radios in the desert."
Yeah, but
only
but
a few
Tom,
weeks later, he broke his pledge.
Okay, but Tom, Bush promised us that the war would only last a few weeks. What if the war is never-ending? What if the war is unceasing? What if the war lasts 30 years? Should we then not criticize the president for those 30 years?
I'm talking about specifically what John Kerry himself said, that we should not, while our troops are in harm's way, once shooting starts. Those are his words. We should not, and I quote, "You owe it to the troops not to make those kind of statements."
Tom, are our troops in harm's way now?
Who said, "I won't criticize to make those kind of statements."
Tom, are our troops in harm's way now?
Who said, "I won't criticize the president right now," and then 2 weeks later, he's doing it. Well, there's a difference between that.
Well, I can testify about being one of those troops in 1970 in Vietnam.
Tell us, Gordon.
And John Kerry was back in the world telling our story, because I was in the cab, and our unit ended up spearheading the invasion into Cambodia. And he was telling our story. He said, "Let's get us out of here," because we knew by that point that the war was basically not going to be stopping the domino theory, which was basically a non-idea anymore. And he was in fact stating our cause, the cause that we couldn't say, because we were out in the bush on the line at that point.
Well, actually,
basically,
soldiers are not supposed to speak.
A man who had done time in college, and then their 2S rating had gone away, and they were 1A, and they got drafted, and they were already came over there, and we were disillusioned about the war. And there were mutinies in the field going on, and I can testify that I was a part of one of those mutinies.
Wow.
And I say that with honor.
Well, Gordon, I'll tell you something.
I think that was perhaps the one time I made a stand for what was right.
You know, it strikes me, and it makes me think of what's going on, what went on in Abu Ghraib today. It really struck me when I saw, and I've now watched it at least twice, completely twice, and parts of it more than twice, the debate between John O'Neill and John Kerry. And it strikes me what Kerry was saying, that people were mutinying in the field, Gordon, precisely that. He said that to John O'Neill, and that they went to their superiors, and their immediate superior, the immediate commanding officer, supported Kerry. Kerry was basically saying, these free fire zones, we don't want to do them. We don't want to shoot at everyone that moves. We don't think that that's a good idea. And when he came home, he found out it violated Geneva Conventions. And finally, his commanding officer was replaced. But it strikes me, and I want to hear from you folks, if you want to call in and tell me, what would you do in the situation where you are ordered by your superior officer to do something that you find to be inhumane, against international law? You know, what do you do? You're ordered to torture somebody. What do you do? It's easy to say, maybe, sitting here, oh, well, I would have mutinied. I wouldn't have done it. You know, Nuremberg principles. But when you're there, and you're under orders, and you can be put in prison or harassed by your troops, I mean, you're out in the middle of nowhere, it's very, very hard to disobey these kinds of orders.
And it's the kind of thing you've got to know what the score is before you make a stand. Because I know my first 4 months, I was pretty much gung-ho, and I pretty much just did what I was told. But after about 5, 6, 7 months in country, you start to realize what the real score is, that they're just running around. You're just running around the jungle, looking for an ambush. And they called that contact, and they said that was good. And we're getting it chopped up. And nobody seems to care much about it. And nothing seems to change much. You know, because I've come back to the world, and I've talked to guys who worked the very same AO I worked a year before I did. And it was really eye-opening, because nothing changed. Nothing changed whatsoever. It was just the same thing with no mission, just walk around, make contact, get shot up, shoot back. You know, and it was just complete disillusionment. And, you know, after you catch on after 9, 10, 11 months, you don't want to die for that.
I'll tell you, it really strikes me, it's shocking to me, that, those that want to elect Bush are so, so pushing these Swift Boat ad stuff. Because I remember talking on this show months ago saying, I didn't think they'd bring it up. I was wrong. I admit when I'm wrong. Because here you have a guy who not only went to fight, but then came, I mean, he fought heroically, won all these medals, and then he came home and admitted that a lot of what he did in support, you know, of U.S. policy, what he was ordered to do, was wrong, which to me takes even more courage than earning the medals to begin with, versus the exact flip side, a man, or a boy, maybe I should say, because he didn't act much like a man, a boy who wanted others to go and fight the war, supported the war, not even like Clinton, who didn't support the war and didn't want to go and fight. A guy who supported the war, Bush and Cheney, both supported it, should have to fight it, felt that other people should fight it, and then didn't even show up in his champagne unit of the National Guard. I mean, Tom, don't you think this is a big mistake to even bring up these comparisons?
Well, John Kerry basically did not just free fire zones, but it was also talked about how he personally helped burn down and smoke out and destroy villages
and
other atrocities. And you have these veterans who, like Joseph Ponder, who's a veteran who's come out with the Swift Vote Veterans, he says, my daughters and wife read portions of the book Tour of Duty. They wanted to know if I took part in these atrocities described. I do not believe that these atrocities happened.
Well, those atrocities were line of duty stuff. That was just matter of fact stuff.
Tell us, Gordon, the things you saw.
Exaggerating anything.
Gordon, tell us what you saw with your own eyes. You were there. Neither Tom nor I were. Tell us what you saw.
Okay, we had non-free fire zones near Benoit, which was our division base camp, and we were trained for just free fire, for no free fire, for a complete free fire zone. So we would go into these other zones and we would just work as if it was a free fire zone, and it wasn't, and nobody would say anything, and we ended up, we wiped out some lumbermen one day. They were, because we thought they were snipers in a tree, and they were just trying to do hook up electrical wiring, and the first gook I killed was a little girl, maybe about 13 or 14 years old. She walked out of her villa at night, and too bad. We were there staking the place out. Sorry about that.
Wow.
And, when we got over by the Cambodian border, things got a little more ruthless because it was NVA action.
What does that mean, MVA action?
North Vietnamese.
Okay.
And in the non-free fire zones, we were dealing with VC and villagers and things. But this was just the MVA over in Cambodia, and this was before we even invaded Cambodia. We just went over there for the sanctuaries. We didn't care where the border was. We were working there in 69. And, that's when we started to run into the hardcore action. And when they would capture us, we would have MIA or something after a firefight, and we'd find them. His torso and his head cut off, and then we learned how to do that too. And so we didn't take prisoners. I remember after firefights, we would execute. We couldn't deal with a prisoner. We couldn't deal with 20 prisoners. We had to kill them all, and they killed us. And, that's why I say all this prisoner war stuff is I don't relate to it because I just never saw it. We never took prisoners, and they didn't take us as prisoners at our level.
Well, Gordon, that's very testimony. I'll tell you, it seems to me that it's a basic question of who we are as Americans, who we are as a country. Do we believe that all war is all-out war? And many of you may feel that way. I mean, that's certainly the point of view that many of these Swift Boat veterans share. But if there are laws of war, if there are international law, Geneva Conventions, then if we're supposed to follow the law, we should. And I think that's what John Kerry was saying. And, what's interesting is that's the wrong term. It brings up to mind the idea of Nazi death camps, and no one's saying anyone in Vietnam was doing that kind of stuff. But in terms of violating the laws of war, John Kerry asked John O'Neill in the Dick Cavett hour-long debate if he was in free fire zones, and John O'Neill had to admit that he was. A lot of people were in free fire zones. And John Kerry didn't see, he said he didn't see the kind of personal atrocities like people cutting off people's heads and things like that, but other veterans did, and when he read the accounts of other veterans in a speech before the Senate, that's the exact quote that they're using now in these Swift Boat ads. It's just very interesting to me, and this is what my article is going to be on, and it should be out by the end of today. It's very interesting to me that these veterans that are condemning John Kerry, I think, are doing it because of their own failure to admit what they did. Gordon, I think you're very brave.
It's a graduating illness. You get into it, and as the brutality goes, it escalates, and you don't realize the madness that you're getting into. And you can't really see it until you get out of it, and you say, oh, my God, what the hell happened? And I'm thinking about stuff that happened 5, 6, 7, now 30 years ago, and I'm relating and saying, well, my God, that's what really happened. In your mind, you don't really realize it.
It's interesting. The main person behind these ads, the guy that called up O'Neill, is former Admiral Roy Hoffman. And he actually used to praise John Kerry to the hilt. No one ever challenged John Kerry's heroism, really, until the book Tour of Duty came out. And in Tour of Duty, and this is author Douglas Brinkley working from John Kerry's notes and others' notes, not just John Kerry, he writes that Admiral Roy Hoffman, quote, had a genuine taste for the more unsavory aspects of warfare and truly wanted to smoke the Viet Cong out of their tunnels, burn their jungle outposts, and annihilate them once and for all. Decades later, many Swift Boat veterans under Hoffman's command would compare him with the rough-hewn colonel in the movie Apocalypse Now, who boasted that he loved the smell of napalm in the morning. And Hoffman gives a specific incident told by John Kerry where a guy basically used a Swift Boat to cut off 40 Vietnamese fishermen and then sank their boats and killed these unarmed men, which Apocalypse Now, who boasted that he loved the smell of napalm in the morning. And Hoffman gives a specific incident told by John Kerry where a guy basically used a Swift Boat to cut off 40 Vietnamese fishermen and then sank their boats and killed these unarmed men, which Hoffman called fantastic. When that book, just a few weeks later, is when Hoffman started the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. And I just have to think that this is a guy who's fighting his own demons, only he's taking it out on the national stage. I do want to hear...
What you have here is you have a debate over the First Amendment. You have John Edwards, who eloquently said, look, John Kerry is going to make his service in Vietnam, not his voting record in the United States Senate for the last 20 years, but his service in Vietnam, basically the cornerstone of his campaign, saluting smartly.
Hoffman started the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. And I just have to think that this is a guy who's fighting his own demons, only he's taking it out on the national stage. I do want to hear...
What you have here is you have a debate over the First Amendment. You have John Edwards, who eloquently said, look, John Kerry is going to make his service in Vietnam, not his voting record in the United States Senate for the last 20 years, but his service in Vietnam, basically the cornerstone of his campaign, and crisply in saying, I'm John Kerry and I'm reporting for duty. He's making that the pinnacle of one of the stand words of why we should elect him to be President of the United States. And so it's a matter of, now we have, what, 300 or so veterans who have signed on with the new book that's going to be coming out questioning what exactly John Kerry and his role in Vietnam. Do they have the right, or should they be muzzled? And
then
captured, hiding in a hole just like a rat would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to people in the news who've got their tongues moving 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today, I've got a network of goobers for you. The haunching our government. Second is the astonishing police crackdown against ordinary citizens who dare to protest at these conventions. Like a third world dictatorship, our government now routinely uses massive and abusive force to shut down democratic expression, and it's time for the media to expose it. This is Jim Hightower saying, there's breaking news right in front of these media gooberheads. If only they had the journalistic gumption and integrity to cover it.
Goodfellas on DVD today. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times calls it the best mob movie ever.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The masterpiece by Martin Scorsese, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, is on a 2-disc special edition DVD.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
Loaded with bonus features, including director commentary, documentaries, and more.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Goodfellas, buy it today on DVD. Rated R.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, this Election Tuesday, featuring my regular Tuesday guest, Tom Robbins, the chairman of the state chairman of the Utah College Republicans, and I got a caller on the line, Gordon, who himself is a Vietnam vet and has been telling us some really harsh stories, but that stories, I think, Gordon, that we need to hear. And before we went to commercial, Tom asked me some tough questions that I want to answer. About the funding of these things. What is the difference between MoveOn and .org and Swift Vets, and how is it that Bush can ask them to take their ads off the air? And I should say, Tom, I just want to read a comment to you by Steve, who writes on the blog. I just want to thank Tom Robbins for coming on the show every Tuesday. This kind of debate is found nowhere else on radio. I appreciate it, and I'm sure Mark and other listeners do as well. And, Tom, I do appreciate it. I don't agree much with you, but I do very much appreciate your coming and, you know, making me defend my points on the air. I appreciate that.
Well, it's good to be on every week, and it's gotten, you know, it's gotten me to do some things like watch 9/11 and the whole DNC convention. So hopefully, on the flip side, you'll watch the whole RNC convention. We'll talk about it.
I will watch the whole RNC convention, and we will talk about it. And Tom, you know, with enough time and enough years, maybe we can.
On the flip side, you'll watch the whole RNC convention. We'll talk about it.
I will watch the whole RNC convention, and we will talk about it. And Tom, you know, with enough time and enough years, maybe we can change your mind. I don't know. If Utah may be a blue state around the time hell freezes over, but it could happen. In any case, I do want to answer your question because it's something that I think the Bush administration is doing very much in responding. What's happening? You have dishonorable, dishonest, and very, very wrong. That's a direct quote from John McCain. And, of course, all these ads about him in the medals are all, you know, Navy documents prove that the Swift Boat veterans are not telling the truth. They're making up these stories 30 years later. And I think that the reason why people are calling on the president to disavow these ads is very simple. They're false. Smear campaign. Now, Bush has responded by saying, well, it's all 527 ads. Well, what's the old campaign law? These are basically vote veterans by saying that, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to put their ads on air. What they are saying is the president should disavow these ads because they're not true. And the president comes back and says, well, you know, I'm on .org ads. that are, is not true. And the difference between the Swift Boat ads and the MoveOn.org ads are that simple. They're both negative attacks, but the Swift Boat ads are false. And that is why I think the president should disavow it. And it's interesting, of course, Kerry has disavowed the MoveOn.org ad, that org ads, even though they're true. Tom?
Where, as far as the Swift Boats veterans are concerned, you have over 300 veterans who have signed on. I don't think you can just dismiss their concerns about John Kerry's war record or to the extent which he perhaps exaggerated or colorfully displayed.
Very express example. Every American certainly has the right to say, I disagree with John Kerry's anti-war activities. I don't like that he revealed that we violated international law or that he called us war criminals. That's horrible. I hate John Kerry. And I think that that's frankly many of the motivation for these Swift Boat veterans. But to claim I served with John Kerry when they weren't on the boats, when they weren't around when it happened, to say I treated John Kerry when you don't have your name isn't on the medical report, and when you make these incredible things like Bob Dole was saying, he got three pieces of shrapnel and apparently never bled. Gordon, actually, you made a point about that. I want you to go ahead and say it on the air.
Well, yeah, I've got a few frag wounds myself, and they don't bleed because they're so hot when they go in, they cauterize the wound. Very little blood involved, but they're deep wounds.
And I haven't heard that anywhere except from you, Gordon, and I want to appreciate that. That's why I wanted you to say that. I mean,
Were you checking out, for example, right now I'm looking at Michael Moore's website, which is basically the largest anti-Bush, fully funded event.
All right.
And I'm clicking on Mike's RNC Protest Resource Guide.
Okay.
No to the Bush Agenda, which massively basically displays exactly what you need to do to disrupt the convention, to be able to get your face on there. He's not worried about truth. He's worried about a colorful media spotlight display.
As far as I know, Mike,
funded by the left and their 527 groups. George Sorensen.
I don't think Michael Moore is running for president. I mean, not that I know of. I mean, I can name all kinds of crazy people on the right and the left.
Yeah, but what you're talking about here is a situation where, and I've seen the Kerry campaign talk about this, Swift Vote Veterans for Truth is just funded by, you know, people who are close to the president and want to
push
their agenda.
Which is true, right?
On 527s, as far as Move On
campaign
to Go Out.
Is promoting MoveOn.org. I deputy chair in terms of outreach to veterans of the Bush campaign, and he's actually featured in a Swift Vote ad. We know that in Gainesville, Florida, the Republicans were handing out flyers to promote Swift Boats. Tell me, what has John Kerry done to promote MoveOn.org or any of his close associates?
Well, what you're asking is for the President of the United States to muzzle these over 300 veterans, telling them that what they're doing is inappropriate.
This is different from muzzle. No one is saying that they should be locked up for what they're saying.
They should be shut down. They shouldn't be able to speak their mind.
No,
MoveOn.org has put out stuff which is absolutely misleading and is false, and it's using
$1 billion
of George Sorensen and the other
Hey, Tom, what has MoveOn.org said that's false? Tell me. They said some things that were inflammatory. Absolutely true, and that's opinion, and opinion is often inflammatory. What have they said that's false?
When you hear Bush being compared to Nazis, how about this?
They disavowed that. Kerry disavowed that, and MoveOn.org disavowed that. I mean, let's just talk about that real quick, and then I'll get on to your other point. MoveOn.org said, you want to send us an ad about George Bush, you send us an ad. Hundreds of people sent ads. One or two of those ads did compare Bush to Hitler, and MoveOn.org immediately removed those ads and said they won't be part of the consideration. Tell me again how this is Kerry's fault. I don't get it, but I don't see how that's...
Well, what John Kerry's campaign is tactically, they are just a scam of the right and of the funding of the right.
But they are.
But you have, on the left, the exact same scenario with Michael Moore's website, with MoveOn.org. Let's talk about John Kerry.
John Kerry is talking about two things.
The moral high ground, right?
Sure.
John Edwards said this is a time for the president
right.
to
That's
have
why he
moral
disavowed the MoveOn.org ads that were accurate.
This is a time for the president
right.
to
That's
have
why he
moral
disavowed the
ground.
MoveOn.org ads that were accurate. You still haven't told me one that's false that talked about George Bush's National Guard AWOL stuff.
Well, how about this? John Kerry participated himself in an event fundraiser with Hollywood superstars who he said represented the heart and soul of America, who called Bush a thug and a killer, and other inappropriate things were said. The Bush campaign called on John Kerry to disavow those remarks and to apologize. Did he? No.
Well, Well, first
but
of all,
the flip side, Kerry
wait a minute, ask for an apology
in this case when he won't do it himself.
Well, there's a, look, you know, I'm sure that Kerry will disavow calling George Bush a thug or a killer.
He's been asked. Egglepsy sent him a direct letter.
And no, they asked him
exactly what the Bush camp's doing with the Swift boat letter.
Asked him to provide a please tell me a lie they've said about George Bush.
A false,
not an opinion, not, you know, you're a horrible, evil person, but tell me a
fact.
Well,
that's enough to be able to say that he's a thug, a killer, with not being able to back that up.
Do you see the difference between saying you're a thug and a killer and saying you lied to get your medal, that there was no firefight at a specific day, at a specific time when you leaned over to save Jim Rassman's life? That would be like saying to George Bush, you sexually harassed one of the women that's accused him of it, which, by the way, I don't believe. But, I mean, that's a statement of fact. There's a difference between a statement of opinion and a statement of fact. It's actually a legal difference as well. In fact, you cannot slander someone for calling them a thug. You can't. Not even really a killer, since it's usually rhetorical excess. If I were to say, and mean it, George W. Bush killed such and such person on such and such day, you know, he murdered someone, that would be slander. But it's not slander to use rhetorical excess. And I have to say, I haven't seen Kerry support this rhetorical excess. Kerry has condemned MoveOn.org.
He's called on directly. He's attacked college Republicans when he couldn't even fill his own coffers in the campaign. He was getting his butt kicked by Dean. He will stoop to any low denominator to do what it takes to win.
Stoop. Here you have, I mean,
30 years.
What do you think about what George Bush did to John McCain? What do you think about the push polls, the allegations of illegitimate black baby, the getting the fringe veterans group to accuse John McCain, all this stuff. Is that not stooping?
Well, let's talk about this. The problem is, Mark, is that you demonize George W. Bush every time you get on your show. You've been doing it for, you know, the last year.
I demonize his handlers. I don't think Bush is smart enough really to be a demon.
Which is that's fine. You can demonize George W. Bush. The problem that you have, though, Mark, is that you place John Kerry on a pedestal.
I don't think John Kerry's perfect. I don't think John Kerry's perfect.
Who will rescue the left and who will raise up everybody?
He did rescue Jim Rassman, but no, he's not perfect.
He stinks. He's dirty. He doesn't want to talk
about his
record.
Do you want me to criticize John Kerry on something?
He's not going to be better in Bush as far as being able to demonize him.
Do you want me to criticize John Kerry on something? Is that what you want to hear?
Go right ahead.
Okay, I think John Kerry's stance on same-sex marriage is wrong. I think that he needs to get with the times and recognize that gay people should have a right to marry just like straight people, and I think Kerry's wrong on that. There.
Oh, don't worry about it, Mark. He'll get there. He's only saying what he thinks the voters want to hear right now.
Well, you know what? I'm actually, this may surprise you, Tom, because I don't, believe it or not, I don't get my talking points for the Democratic National Committee, and I don't work for them anymore, at least. I never worked for the Democratic National Committee. I worked for Democratic Member of Congress. But I don't read from their talking points, and I will tell you that I think on the issue of gay marriage, actually, Kerry is standing with where he thinks most of America is, and he thinks most of America is not ready for gay marriage. I happen to disagree with him, but I think you're right. I think it's a political choice he's making. I think that's true. Politicians make those, and I won't defend that. See, I don't feel I have to defend every single thing that John Kerry does, but I will defend against people who are lying about his heroism because they don't want to talk about George Bush and his, you know, failure to show up for the National Guard. I mean, they're trying very much to take the issues away from the war in Iraq that's going on right now, our crumbling economy, the fact that we have the highest deficit in American history, the fact that wages are going down, the fact that people like you, Tom, are finding it much harder to get jobs in Bush's universe, the middle class has a higher tax burden. All these things, these facts, right, the Republicans don't want to talk about. They much rather talk about Vietnam 33 years ago, which I have to admit is very interesting because I like history and I like to hear Gordon's stories. But don't you think they're just trying to change the subject?
Well, if you want to talk about facts, the fact is that John Kerry has over $1 trillion in programs, which he's proposed and promised to everybody, acting like he's Kerry Claus, Mr. Santa himself, who will provide a solution, not worrying how to pay for it, of over $1 trillion. He's promising. That's why 48% of people in Massachusetts say in a recent poll that John Kerry will say and do anything to get elected.
You know what, Tom?
They know him.
Tom, I want you to send me that poll so I can take a look at how it was phrased. And our time is about up, but the debate will continue. Next week, actually, is the Republican National Convention, and I will watch it in full, I promise. Well, maybe not in full, but at least all the main primetime speeches. That's all I did for the Democrat National Convention as well. And, Tom, you'll be back to talk about that with me?
Yeah, we'll be back to talk about the Republican National Convention. I'm excited because we're going to get a bounce out of the
I don't think so. Everybody knows Bush. They already think what they think about Bush. I see no bounce at all. But one of us will be wrong, and you will find out who that is. Maybe not next Tuesday, but in a couple Tuesdays. I hope you'll tune in then. And our time is about up. I'll tell you, I do think that I want to thank Tom for coming on. The listeners write. This is the kind of debate America needs to have. Sometimes get on side issues, but it's important to understand how people think, how the Republicans think, how I think. You should be able to defend what you believe in, because that, my friends, is what democracy is all about. This is Mark Levine. Until tomorrow, signing off.